The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Come on in, everybody. It's time for another edition of Need to Know. Kip Kiefer with you. It is Monday morning, a brand new week, the second week of the brand new era in America. And did we get out of the blocks quickly or what? Tony Curry and I last week on Kiefer and Curry, after I talked about all of the wondrous things I had just witnessed with the inauguration process. That's what we were reacting to this time a week ago. Donald Trump raising his right hand and swearing to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States, so help him God. And what we have witnessed since, and all of that circumstance was so extraordinary, but to cop an old phrase, we ain't seen nothing yet, because the rest of the week last week was absolutely dizzying, breathtaking, a spectacle that we've never witnessed in this country before. And it comes down to, we did not just swear in a president of the United States. The man who was sworn in last Monday, 1 week ago from right now, is a leader. This is what leadership looks like. This is what taking the reins and taking responsibility for living up to what you've talked about, for following through on your promises, for the execution of making things happen that are in dire need of attention. And what we have seen in the first, not 100 days, because we're only in day seven now, but it's the first 100 hours that history will always remember, because it was truly historic. Donald Trump went from the ceremony at the Capitol Rotunda, which took several hours after the inauguration. He had to go to the congressional luncheon and make another talk. He had to be involved in some of the pomp and circumstance at the rotunda. Finally got out of there middle afternoon and transported to the arena where the Washington Capitals play, the hockey team, also, of course, the Washington Wizards basketball team, the Capital One Arena. And the de facto parade that was moved out of the elements outside kind of went through the convention's floor, or the arena floor, in front of 24,000 people that they made room for and crammed into that facility. You had a lot of the marching bands, those young people that get that opportunity to go to the Capitol and be part of history inaugural ceremonies were really robbed of their chance to march down the hallowed streets of our Capitol. But then they did get to perform at that particular stop. And it was extraordinary. You had a situation where, high school bands, college bands. I loved the Mississippi Valley Band, which is one of those, historically black colleges and universities. Mississippi Valley State, of course, famously the alma mater of the late Steve McNair, who was a great quarterback, record-setting quarterback. Many years ago, Steve McNair came to Birmingham as Mississippi Valley's quarterback and played Samford right here in Homewood. And it's the only Samford football game I've ever attended, but I went with my son because we wanted to see Steve Air McNair. And he certainly lived up to his promise that day and throughout his college career and had a great NFL career until dying tragically in a domestic incident after he was retired from the game. But all that being said, the Mississippi Valley band put on this tremendous performance because they're one of those bands like Florida A&M and some of the other famous ones from these institutions where these guys don't just play music. I mean, they move and groove and shuck and buck. And it's so entertaining to see people like with that energy level and the aptitude. I mean, I have no musical ability at all. And it is so amazing to me that people can not only play their instruments and make the sounds they make and play in conjunction with one another. The whole spectacle of a marching band to me is just such a cool thing and something that I have admired all my life. And I've always told my kids that I always made a point when I was playing sports, basketball, we had pep bands. Of course, football, you've got the full-scale band that's out there. And going to the locker room, you don't get to see them perform. But going to other games, and back in the day, the bands always were a big deal at football games because at halftime, that used to be the show. Now you've got to have people spinning plates on their nose and jumping through the goalposts off trampolines and setting themselves on fire or whatever. But the whole spectacle of a marching band is just an amazing conglomeration of talents. And I've always admired it. I've always told my kids, I always went out of my way to mention, because when you come out for pregame, the bands are still out there and doing their thing. I used to tell friends of mine or even people in uniform that I would pass great job the other night. I always have acknowledged those people because I've always had such admiration for their talents and what they do as a group. There's nothing better than really bonding together with another group of people and putting on just a great performance, a great show, and being a cohesive unit. So I wanted to really give a shout out to the Mississippi Valley Band who made that ceremony at Capital One extra special. Well, the extra special part came when the president stood up and gave his third or fourth speech of the day, and it wasn't even 4 o'clock yet, and really just thrilled the crowd and acknowledged a lot of special guests they had, which were relatives of many of the hostages that have been held by Hamas since that horrific date of October 7th in 2023, when killers, terrorists raided Israel in suburban areas and at a musical festival. These were not soldiers they attacked. These were not military people. These were people sitting around in their house on a Saturday night, presumably watching TV or engaging in family activities. The shameless, unbelievably, incalculably evil murder and torture of old people and children and the sexual abuse of girls and women. And then the taking of hostages by the hundreds for a very specific purpose, which I'll get into in just a minute. But Donald Trump basically signaling again, this is the end of all that. You release these people or there's going to be hell to pay. His whole presence at that event was electrifying, and the people in the arena certainly responded because this is not the tone that we hear from presidents. He was measured. He was not defiant. He was not polarizing. He was just saying it's time to get America back on track. It's time to get back to the business of being the most significant country on earth. It was America first. It was loud and clear. And it was just an extraordinary continuation. But again, we hadn't seen nothing yet, because he goes right back to the White House, where he has not set foot as a president again. He'd been sworn in. He'd been gone all day. He walks in. He goes to the Oval Office. There are his staff standing by with a gigantic stack of more executive orders. And I left out the best part of the arena. Then he goes at the arena before getting back to the White House. They have a makeshift desk set up on the stage. He takes his seat and they start bringing him executive orders that he is signing in front of 20,000 people while they cheer wildly. We've never, ever seen anything like that. And he's talking about each issue as he's signing his name. They're announcing what each piece of executive action is going to do. It was absolutely extraordinary. This is the greatest retail politician in the history of this country. This is a guy who knows how to combine events, maximize moments, and get the maximum amount of exposure to what he's doing and how he's fulfilling promises and how he is going completely against the grain of what the conventional thinking of politicians always has been, that they have to operate somewhat in a cloak of secrecy or obscurity, so it doesn't stir up too much talk and contention. This guy is out front, and he has an agenda, and he publicizes his agenda. He ran on his agenda, and he had not even celebrated. He had not even soaked it in. He took the oath, and he literally went to work. He leaves the arena. He goes right back to the White House. He enters the Oval Office. The staff is waiting with a whole stack of critically, I mean, some of the things, just amazing undertakings. And once again, campaign promises and policies that he said, I am going to, from day one, take charge of this. And of course, jokingly, in an interview with Sean Hannity back last year, he said, in an answer to a question that Hannity had asked him about being the Democrats saying this is the end of democracy because if you vote for Trump, you're voting for a dictator. He said, well, I'm going to be a dictator on the first day. And then he went on to say, because I'm immediately going to open the drilling and exploration and restocking of America as a energy titan. We're going to drill, baby, drill from day one. And the other thing I'm going to immediately impose is a complete shutdown of the border, securing of this country, and the process of getting so many of these criminal elements who were allowed to enter this country, who would not be allowed to enter any other country on earth, but because we had an administration that was bent on, they didn't care who came in, just as long as people from all over the world came in, for a couple of different reasons. One, to continue to destabilize our own country so they could maintain power and control. But more importantly, these are people that they envision would basically finally get the opportunity to repopulate their dwindling base of support, bring people in that were used to government being in charge of everything, that were comfortable not having individual liberty, and basically starting to replace the people that they had alienated by populating with millions of new citizens, not Americans, not people that legally are allowed to vote, but continue to work on programs to get more and more of these people involved in the electoral process. It was a desperate attempt to maintain power, and it was so transparent. That's why we just opened the borders, and anybody, we didn't care, rapist, murderer, person from an insane asylum. All these countries dumped all of the dregs of their society on America because we opened the border and said, come on in. We've got a spot for you here. We don't care if you're a Trendyagua member, which was a prison gang. It's a prison gang in Venezuela. Have you seen a prison movie? Have you read a book about the experience in these kind of institutions where the inner power is the inmates themselves? The slogan, the inmates are running the asylum. That's where it comes from. The inmates were dumped into the United States. These are people that have committed murder, rape, child molestation, all kinds of crimes of kidnapping and ransom and stealing the livelihoods and lives of innocent people in their countries. And we welcomed them into the United States with open arms. Donald Trump immediately said on that first day, that's the priority. And of course, what have you heard and continue to hear from Joe Biden and the other Democrat jackals that have been in charge of this country the last in the last 12 of 16 years, Donald Trump declared he will be a dictator the very first day. And they didn't say that, though. They said he will be a dictator from day one. That is not what he said. That was not the quote. He was jokingly saying, well, I'm going to be a dictator right away because I'm going to get us back in the exploration of energy business, and I'm going to seal the border and start to get these people that do not belong in this country, that we don't have any apps. There's no justification to bring in convicted criminals. They are not qualified to transfer countries. You don't empty your prisons and let them pour in here. And we've got a terrible problem on our hands with now, by estimates, 58,000 convicted felons alone in New York and throughout the other places in our country, far more than 100,000, maybe up to 250,000 convicted felons from all over the world who we allowed to come to America. It's insanity. There's a poll that came out on Saturday that I just absolutely blown away by. It says that 65% of Americans favor deportation of criminals that have been convicted in other countries. 65%. That's a huge number. But folks, that means 35% responded, no, I don't agree with that. What? How can you not agree with deporting and getting out of our country people that have committed murder in other countries, people that have kidnapped others, people that have molested children, people that have trafficked women and children for sex and labor and God knows what else? We've got 300,000 children that have come across the border in this whole debacle of wide open Biden border policy, which, as I have made it quite clear, no policy that we have endured the last 4 years has been Joe Biden's policy. Joe Biden has no policy. Joe Biden has very few brainwaves. Joe Biden was a front man, a puppet, was a guy that was conveniently compliant because he didn't have the will or existing mental acuity to be able to be anything else but somebody who would go out and read what he was instructed to read and say what he was told to say. So, you know, how in the world, if you ask anybody walking on the street, do you agree with the deportation of violent criminals, of people convicted of felonies and violent crime in other countries? Do you agree with their deportation? How does 35% of people say no? It's mind-boggling. Anybody with a functioning brain does not want to have in their country these kind of people. People that murder Lake and Riley. People that murder Rachel Marne. People that murder Jocelyn. I've forgotten her last name. The young 12-year-old Mexican descent young lady down in Texas who was 12 years old. Who was brutally raped and murdered and left in a creek. How can anybody not favor the deportation of people inclined to this kind of behavior, inclined to this gang violence, this taking over of entire apartment complexes in Colorado and ruling with an iron fist like some kind of third world country? America is not a third world country. America is the shining city on the hill, the beacon that the whole world looks to. And look what a difference in 1 week. Look what a difference in this world already has transpired. Trump sits down in the Oval Office on that first day after all this has been going on. He's been up since like 5 o'clock in the morning. He's been inaugurated. He's taken part in four or five different ceremonies, made five or six different speeches, and he sits down and starts signing orders. They're handing them these things. He says, "What's this one? Oh, this is a good one." It was like a kid at Christmas. His list was being fulfilled of all the things he said he was going to do, and he sat down. But here's the most remarkable thing that we've never, ever seen on a day that we saw all kinds of things we'd never seen. He had a group of four reporters in there who were witnessing the whole event, and they were just casually asking him questions, mostly about each particular piece of order that he was signing, but also just opening up general conversation. And he was responding completely impromptu while he signed the papers to all of those questions. It was like you and I having a seat in the Oval Office in the inner circles of the this casual discussion with Peter Ducey and others, where he's with just completely off the cuff, asking him any question. He's giving his opinion on world events. He's talking about initiatives that he wants to impose. He's talking about reestablishing this country. It was absolutely incredible. While the national championship college football coverage was going through their endless four-hour pregame, Donald Trump had the most compelling program that maybe in the history of live television going on in the Oval Office, just to have that kind of, and you get glimpses and pictures from the Oval Office, occasionally a speech from the Oval Office. This was direct business of government and interaction with people in the press in the Oval Office on live TV. We didn't see Joe Biden for an hour and 10 minutes, which was the time of that impromptu program with Trump. We didn't see him for an hour and 10 minutes in the totality of his entire administration. And certainly not Obama, not George W. Bush. Nope. None of the presidents that we've seen in the modern era of communications. You've never seen anything like this. And it was absolutely amazing. He's gone on, of course, the rest of the week to be everywhere, has been down to Congress and gotten with those guys on the policies of what they got to get done for him. He's been promoting his cabinet members and encouraging that their quick ratification, because he wants to get on with the business of running this country. And if that wasn't enough, on Friday, he gets on Air Force One and goes to North Carolina. There have been no Joe Biden. This happened on his watch. Joe Biden has not been anywhere near North Carolina since the incalculable, unbelievable damage to Western North Carolina, particularly around Asheville and some of the more elevated areas. The torrential rains brought by Hurricane Helene, not a place where a hurricane should theoretically threaten. It was just an anomaly of what took place. A hurricane that hit up around the Florida Panhandle. And through just a bizarre set of circumstances, unleashed so much rain and so much water that it washed away hillsides and swept away in ravaging floodwaters thousands of homes and took hundreds of lives. And this government under Biden, with all the corruption, was so slow to react. And it came out, don't forget, that the people on the ground for FEMA, if there was a Trump sign in the yard of a damaged home, they were instructed to skip that particular location. That's how politicized people that have been decimated by flood damage, by the most incalculable horrors that you can possibly imagine, were being passed over because of their political persuasion. It's absolutely unconscionable. So Trump actually shows up there on his third day in office to reassure those folks that help is coming. The government is back in business. We are not going to politicize things. We are not going to blame inaction on it takes a long time to get mobilized. He promised instant results, and they is already delivering on that. And if that's not enough, he and the First Lady then get on Air Force One, fly to California for a full afternoon and evening, continuing the process of assessing the fire damage in Los Angeles, and sitting down in another, something you never see, a live television event with people from all different persuasions, regular citizens, local press, and community leaders, including the extremely left-wing Democrat mayor of California and a lot of different councilmen and people that their ridiculous policies. Yes, this was a natural disaster, but it was exacerbated and completely overblown by human policies, stupidity, really, of allowing the circumstances to be in place for this to turn into just an absolute catastrophe. And the destruction is just indescribable. And a lot of the lack of preparedness and the blasé attitude that led to this, the mayor herself had flown out the day before the warnings of impending doom and gone to Ghana for a presidential inauguration, a big party. I hope she enjoyed herself while her city burned, the modern day Nero from Roman Empire lore. Anyway, I'm kind of rambling here, but I just wanted to frame and put in perspective what we have witnessed, because Trump sat there with his Make America Great cap on, answering every question from every single person standing there, and listened to all of the concerns of the citizens, and basically told the officials of Los Angeles, I am suspending all restrictions, all requirements, all the initial government red tape, and we are going to start helping these people right away. He had toured a couple of the neighborhoods that were completely destroyed and was just struck by how many homeowners were just standing in front of their lots looking at nothingness of what just a week ago were their homes, and they all expressed the same thing to him. We want to start clearing debris. We want to start rebuilding our lives. We want to start now. We want to start tonight. And the mayor was going, well, we're going to give them help. I've already suspended a lot of the requirements and a lot of the red tape. And he's going, that's not good enough. You need to completely do that and let these people start to rebuild their lives. And he basically lectured the mayor of Los Angeles and all of these California people that have to impose all this regulation and all these rules on people. And she said, we have to make sure it's safe for them to go and start addressing the situation. And he said, it's been a week. It's safe. They've been standing there looking at the rubble, and they're dying to get busy to rebuild their lives. And they all intend to stay, and they all intend to press on. And you can't make them wait around. The people were telling Donald Trump that the officials in Los Angeles were saying, well, it might be as much as 18 months before we can get the proper permits and let you, address your situation. 18 months? Are you kidding me? Trump said it can't take 18 minutes. You've got to let these people get back to their lives right now. Let them start. It was extraordinary. Once again, this is what leadership is. This, being president of the United States, is not a ceremonial being some kind of royalty like in England, where the queen and now king Charles, they're the ceremonial head of state, but they're not the government mechanism. And that's how the presidency has become and evolved into. This is a roll up your sleeves, get her done, get busy, or get lost. And it's an extraordinary thing to see what we've started off with over the weekend. We've already been loading up transport planes and shipping out thousands of rounded up criminals and killers and kidnappers and rapists and child molesters, and getting them out of the country. The country of Colombia turned a flight of Colombian returnees out and would not let them land. Trump immediately got on his phone, sent out some executive orders from down in Florida, where he was getting ready to meet with Republicans today to craft legislative strategy. And on Sunday, he didn't wait till Monday. Sunday afternoon, when he got the word they were not letting that plane land and sending it back to America, he told the Colombian president, you either change that policy, or every product you send to us, primarily coffee and flowers and some other major imports, are going to have a huge tariff, and we are going to cripple your economy, because if you don't do business in the United States, we're not going to do business with you. And guess what? The Colombian president, within an hour, reversed course. He said, okay, Mr. President, we're all good. This is what, again, leadership is. America has been taken advantage of, has been a doormat. That is over. Wipe your feet somewhere else, world. America is back because we have a leader in the White House. I had a lot more, but I'm out of time. So we will get into this more next week on some specific issues. But we are witnessing extraordinary things. And folks, what you're witnessing are not just policies and things that are going to make America great. What you're witnessing is history in motion, and it's an extraordinary time to be an American. That's all I've got for this week. Kip Kiefer, Need to Know. We will talk to you again a week from now. Pay attention, because if you're not, you're missing a hell of a show.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.